This is KPTZ in Port Townsend, and this is Attention, Please.
May I have your attention, please?
This week on Attention, Please, it's all about the arts.
Attention, please.
I have with me today Virginia Ashby and Herman James, two artists who are participating in a show at the Grover Gallery downtown in Port Townsend called Psychedelic Summer. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Who wants to start and tell me about this show and why is it called Psychedelic Summer?
It is called Psychedelic Summer because the exhibition's director of high creativity and hard work, Michael Snyder DeBose, and friends at Northwind got together and decided that that would be a great thing to call it, catchy, whatever. But it's also because it's surreal and it's colorful and people have a lot of fun. And I think the psychedelic age was a time when fun was to be.
Right. Colors
upper,
you can
uppermost.
Taste.
Yes.
And in fact, I'm looking at the Northwind Art website. Our listeners can go to northwindart.org and look at the Psychedelic Summer show and some of the paintings, which are absolutely beautiful and super colorful. You both have distinct styles that are not similar, but they're both incredibly vibrant. So, Virginia, want to tell us about your art and how it came to be in this show?
Well, let's see. I have always been doing art forever and ever. Probably decided to be an artist when I was 10. And I've done all kinds of things like paper mache and watercolor. And I tried everything. And I've taught lots of things too. Lots of kids and people with developmental disabilities and such. But acrylics always evaded me. I didn't understand how to work with acrylics. So last year, they started opening up the School of the Arts, and I took a class with Max Grover, and then I took a class with Jesse Watson, and then I started taking classes with Julie Reed. And I really learned how to deal with acrylic, and I love it. I'm completely in love with it. So I've been painting with acrylics for a little over a year, and just feverishly enjoying every moment of it. And Max told me in his class that if I came up with 50 paintings, that would be the way to get a show.
50?
Yes. So I think he was saying,
5-0.
Be ready, right?
Wow.
And also practice.
Yes.
So I did that.
Right.
And so I came up with, there's not 50 of my pieces in the show.
No.
But,
well, not 50, but you arrived with 40, I understand.
I think it was 38.
Oh, 38.
Very close.
By the time you get to the end of 38 paintings, you pretty much know how to paint with acrylic,
yeah.
I'd say.
I've worked with both oils and acrylics myself,
yeah.
And I find that acrylic is great in that it's so immediate,
yeah.
But it's also the kind of thing where you better be clear about what you want to do with it.
Yeah.
Because sometimes what I do is I just paint something and I go, I don't like that. And I scrape the thing because it's on a board,
mm-hmm.
and then I start again. Or I just say, okay, I'll let that dry for an hour.
Right.
And then get back to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, but scraping is good.
Scraping is good. It can produce interesting effects. So Herman, tell me a little bit about your art and how you came to be this painter that you are now.
Well, I've painted for a long time too, and both oil and acrylic. I'm painting more in acrylic now because when I used to be exclusively oil, just because the fumes and things sort of get to me more than they used to. I'm the kid that I was the kid who in class on Fridays when we got together to, to draw and paint at the end of the class, the teacher would hold mine up.
Oh.
See, so I was kind of created
the
in
example.
That way, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
so you
like
got some
that.
Encouragement for that, didn't you?
Did.
Yeah.
And, my mom, too, whenever I said I wanted to be something like a fireman or a microbiologist, would say, hey, but isn't your first love art? And, so I kind of couldn't get out of it.
Right. But were you a microbiologist?
Well, I had a lab in the basement, and a microscope, and I grew all kinds of molds and things. But I think I was more, probably in retrospect, I was more interested in the sculptural nature of all the glassware that I had my parents buy me for Christmas and birthdays.
Yeah. The tools and the equipment.
Yeah,
you were into the
kind
stuff.
Kind of turned me on more than the stuff that was crawling underneath the microscope.
That's an aesthetic. Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's cool. And I also understand from reading about this online that neither of you had met before you were tapped to do this show together. Is that right?
No, we hadn't met, but no. Max put us together, right?
Max, I want to do a shout out to Max.
Sure.
Just because for taking a chance on both of us in various ways. With Virginia, I guess, saying that the showing experience is new for her, right?
And
Yes. I've shown very little in the past, pieces here and there in other shows, but not acrylics ever. And so this is like my biggest sort
right, of and coming exhibition. Off of classwork and things.
Yeah.
And for me, he and I knew each other in Portland 30 years ago. He moved here. I moved to Boston very same year. Meeting him again here just last fall after we bought a house here.
Wow.
So I'm at the coffee shop, right? You know, he didn't recognize me. I introduced myself or reintroduced myself to him. And after talking for a while, he went out on a limb and decided to entrust me with half of this show.
That's really cool. I didn't know that, but you...
Yeah, we were famous kids together in Portland.
Oh, wow.
Back in the day.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah,
And Virginia, what did you do before... You mentioned, I think, something that you said you were doing in your adult life before you started painting in acrylics this
right.
last year.
Well, I worked for the Gathering Place for years and years with adults with developmental disabilities, and I was teaching all kinds of things as an instructor, cooking class, music and movement. It was exciting and enjoyable. I love working with that particular population of folks. And so it's just it was an exercise in joy. And Linda Ferris does a great job with the Gathering Place. But the pandemic came along and everything shut down.
Right.
And I decided to start painting more.
Uh-huh.
And I had time. And then it turned out that my parents had both died, and they left me some money, so I was able to retire officially.
Wow.
Yeah, during the pandemic.
Well, I'm sorry, and wow.
Yeah, well, they didn't die together, but anyway, my mom passed away many years ago, but my father, he was gone, so but he lived a good life, so no worries there.
Okay.
Yeah, but it was great because they gave me and my brothers the opportunity to retire.
That's great.
Yeah. And so I got to concentrate on having classes. And I could afford the art classes, too. So.
Oh, wow, that's good.
Yeah, I couldn't before.
The other thing, full disclosure to our audience, you are a volunteer also for KPTZ, aren't you?
Yeah, it's been a few years now. I write the weekend community calendar. The
weekend community calendar.
Yeah, and before the pandemic, I was voicing different spots. And I also did the entertainment calendar, and I voiced that as well. So, and I enjoyed that, but after the pandemic, then I had obviously dove into the painting. So
right. What else can you tell me? Talk about these actual paintings that you both like. If I say Virginia, there's a painting here called Phineas Fox.
Oh yeah,
which I assume is the one of the fox, and he's wearing a jacket and tie. And
yes,
he's wearing
a boutonniere.
Yeah, boutonniere.
Yeah, he ended up on the poster as well, along with Herman's piece.
Advertised by the brilliant Carrie Tremaine, who will be one of those photographers at the show on the 29th.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah.
I thought it was a great poster.
Yeah. I think it turned out great. Yeah. Yes, Phineas Fox is just a character I wanted to create. I thought, I feel like painting a picture of a fox, but I didn't want him to be, you know, a real-life fox.
Right,
so I made him
He's got green eyes. They're very haunting.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
And I love that movie called The Fantastic Mr. Fox. Have you ever seen that?
It reminded me of that, but I didn't want to bring up Wes Anderson unless, you know, you did.
Oh, yeah. Well, I love what he does. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But that was just coincidental, truly. I tried to make it different from his. But
and you also have one here of two rabbits. It looks like they're sharing a beverage.
Yeah, they are. They're rabbit friends having a nice conversation and... you know, some drinks together.
One might be drinking some carrot juice, I think.
I think so. And the other one has a mug with Oswald Rabbit.
Oswald Rabbit, as opposed to Mickey Mouse.
Oswald was the original Disney creation.
And had long ears instead of, well, yeah, because he was a rabbit
and
not a mouse.
And he was stolen from Walt Disney.
Really?
Yeah. You know about that. That was the original studio that he made animation. And then from then he was always on guard, and that's why trademarks are so hardcore with with Disney because that character was stolen, and then he invented Mickey
Mouse. But it turns out the mouse ears are ubiquitous now.
Yeah.
I mean, all you got to do is draw the shape, and everybody goes, oh, that's Mickey Mouse.
I know. It's really amazing.
Herman, talk to me a little bit about your paintings, too. Like, see, I've got one here. It's called The Pool. It looks like it's, you can see underwater and above the water.
Yes, that's a thing I've done a lot of, the sort of above and below at the same time. It's, The Pool is a kind of a first out. I have a lot of drawings with it of a surreal vision more underwater than upper.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, will show people having fun in the water, mm-hmm. but ultimately there will be other things included in the final painting of fish with, you know, with the beer can plastic stuck around them or, you know, tires and old tires and crap down
there. So a little commentary on the state of our oceans, I guess.
Yeah, there you go.
As well. And then there's another one here. It looks like there's a boy and a girl underwater with masks on, and they're playing with an octopus.
Yeah, it's Hey There Cutie, as it's called. And, you know, the octopus has his one of his tentacles out and has kind of sort of got it up under the chin of the girl.
Uh-huh.
So you would think that, well, Hey There Cutie is the cutie is the octopus, but it might be the girl.
It might be the girl, and the octopus is in love with the girl now.
Yeah, and it's a lot of fun, and it's everything's there surrounded by sea creatures of all kinds, all recognizable and real creatures that I have in file that I use to place there.
I think you even have little water nymphs and things like that in the water too, don't you?
There are things floating and swimming around.
So much going on in your work. All
right.
Beautiful.
Right. They're all absolutely breathtaking, all these paintings are. The layers of detail that you have there, Herman, are incredible. Also, in your paintings, Virginia, the color is intense.
I do like bright colors.
Oh, wow.
Do you think that was the Mexican influence that you seem to have had?
I'm sure.
That you have on, actually, now under
your jacket?
That's
right. I have an embroidered blouse on from Mexico. That's true.
So did you live in Mexico for a while, or you just go there as often as you can?
Well, I was born in Ventura, and there's a large Latino population in Ventura and Oxnard. And, I did marry a Chicano guy, and we're no longer married, but I was really influenced by him and his family and his culture, and did a lot of paper mache, a lot of things about the Day of the Dead, was very involved in lots of festivals and
traveled. Paper mache that's brightly painted on the outside.
Yes, lots of skulls and things, and there's a few pieces in the gallery, in the window of my old work. So, I enjoyed that. I made a lot of dolls and masks and taught classes, and that was fun. But when I came up to the Pacific Northwest, paper mache does not dry. And in Southern California, you just put it on the lawn, and in an hour it's dry, and you can put another layer on. Yeah, but forget it. I had to do something else.
Wow. So. Get yourself a booth.
Yeah.
That can suck all the air out of it and warm it up. Well, thank you both so much for coming in today for this. I'm really excited about your show. So the show started last month, or the beginning of June?
It was the beginning of June.
Right.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And we had our first reception on that Saturday, which was it June 3rd?
June 3rd, and it was a blowout.
Yeah.
It was. Very well attended.
Super. And then, of course, we have Art Walk on July 1st.
That's right.
And will you guys be there with any sort of wine and cheese or anything? Or?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, okay. And we'd like to encourage everybody to wear bright colors.
Virginia made psychedelic cookies.
I did. This last time I did, so I might have to do that again.
Okay. Right. Well, we're not sure we can...
That just means they're colorful.
Oh, I see. Okay. All right. They don't have anything in them.
No,
all right.
Not that. We'll be good.
Virginia Ashby and Herman James, thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you.
This is KPTZ in Port Townsend, and this is Attention Please. We have two artists and a curator of a show coming up at the Jeanette Best Gallery downtown called Outside In. Michael Vince Snyder DeBose, who's the North Wind Arts Exhibitions Director, Brian Goodman, who is an unconventional photographer, and Kerry Tremaine, who has served as executive editor of Mother Jones magazine. And he's also a friend of the wondrous Chimicum artist Sarah Mal Jahani, whose work will be in the show along with sculptures by her late husband Tom Jay. Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Michael, so just tell us a little bit about your position as exhibitions director and what you do and how you came to start this show.
Well, I think of my role as sort of like that of a producer in a movie. You know, mm-hmm. you try to bring all the elements together, put it in the pot, make the soup. And so, you know, you reach out to artists to pull a show together, putting together the graphics and interstitial things and visual elements and creating the exhibition design and that sort of thing. So, and then trying to reach out to people to see if they'll respond, you know, mm-hmm. and come see the show. So Brian and Kerry are very much involved with North Wind and have been just a great teachers, really, to me in this whole process. I've had the great good fortune to become acquainted with Sarah Mal Jahani, who is just a phenomenal person. She lives out in Chimicum, and I've had gone to her studio a couple of times, and it's just a wonderful, wonderful thing. She's an incredible person. Mm-hmm. So,
and she has sculptures in the show.
Indeed, yes.
Yes.
Hers and some by her late husband, mm-hmm. Tom Jay.
Brian, tell us a little bit about the photography and how you came to do this show.
Well, I've been a photographer for many, many years. I picked up my first camera when I was 9 years old, and it seemed to have never left my hands. Kerry actually came to me and with the idea of doing this show together with him. Even though our work is very different, there's some things very much in common in the way we see things. And when he asked me, I said, absolutely, I'd love to do a show with him. So my work is a bit unconventional. It's based on landscape and seascape and cityscape photography, but they're much more abstract, kind of more dreamy. Hopefully takes people to places that they would have been or would like to go, but in their dreams more than reality.
So the term outside in, I read that the idea of the show is to bring the outside in. So all your photos and yours also carry, and the sculptures all do have to do with nature, and you're bringing them into the Jeanette Best Gallery. Are your photographs very large?
Mine are very large.
Like how big?
Well, there will be a triptych that is actually 9 feet wide by 4 feet high.
So like Monet-sized
things. They're big pieces.
Things.
Yeah, there'll be some, I guess you might call them smaller. I believe they're about 26 by 39 inches, I believe. Uh-huh. But those are the small ones. Uh-huh. Everything else is larger than
But is
that.
The large one, is that to be immersive? So you can just stand in front
yeah,
of it and
the,
it just takes in your whole field of vision?
One of the things about photography in this day and age and the ability to print with these printers that we use to print large is we were able to get out of, you know, a small little tray in the darkroom.
Mm-hmm.
And I always wanted to see my work large, and that's part of it, is to be able to be immersed in it. So,
Kerry, tell us a little bit about your photos and how you came to be part of North Wind Art and in this show at the Jeanette Best Gallery.
Well, the North Wind Art part is that I was pretty much in at the beginning of the founding of Port Townsend School of the Arts and served as its president for a number of years, and also with my compatriot Thea Mertz at the North Wind Art Center, as it used to be called. We engineered a merger of the two organizations back in 2020, I think it was during the COVID
right.
year that we right. did that. It was a lot of Zoom meetings. As far as my photography is concerned, I wanted to talk a little bit about the outside in, because that was part of my ideas. And I think it has multiple meanings for me. I mean, the first part of the photography I do, which has been focused on mostly on birds, some wildlife, but mostly birds, for the last 5 years, has been, you know, first of all, to have an experience with the birds. Usually that involves them knowing I'm there, I know they're there. often they fly away or are scared by me and then later come to think that maybe I'm not that much of a threat and come back. But there's something about the experience of being in nature that, as we all know, is transformative. And so part of the goal of the photography is to capture that in some way. It's to, mm-hmm. to me. And then the second part of it involves the editing and what you decide, because you may go out and take, you know, 600 pictures in a day or something like that. So it really matters what do you choose and what do you choose to work on and even how you crop it and all this sort of thing. And in that capacity, I guess my past as an editor and art director and so forth comes to play, because I'm really looking for emotion. And in the emotion, I'm looking for the ways in which birds, which we've co-evolved with, they've been here much longer than we have, that we have, you know, so many stories and myths and songs and artwork that is based on birds. And so we have these icons in our imagination and our storytelling and so forth. So what is it in a photograph that can touch that, you know, can make the bird seem more than just a description, you know, that you'd put in a bird identification book, and something that's elevated more to art? So I look for that, and I want to make that connection. That, to me, is the outside coming into mm-hmm. our brains. Uh-huh. And I want to make that connection because I think it's so important right now that we have this alienation from nature. And I mean, mm-hmm. it's been much remarked upon, but if you just think about, you know, how people lived even 100 years ago compared to now, mm-hmm. we don't have the tools, we can't read the forest, we're alienated from it in this way. And so I think this show about bringing the outside in is partly to try to just at least put a little Band-Aid on that and say, you know, this is to have an experience, you mentioned earlier, to have an experience that in some way goes to what we're experiencing when we're outside.
Right. Well, that's great. You prompted a couple of questions in my mind. One is, you say 600 photos in a day. You're talking about digital photographs these days, which, of course, I have 20,000 on my phone. I'll probably share 1,000 of them in my lifetime. How long did you work with film before you transition to digital?
It's a better question for Brian, who was actually one of the pioneers of digital photography.
Oh, okay.
Well, I had a camera in my hand at 9 years old, and that was film. And I was trained as a conventional film photographer in the studio and darkroom. And I got involved in digital back in 1992 when one of the first viable digital cameras for commercial work was made available.
Who made that?
It was made by a company called Leaf Systems.
Oh, wow.
And it was a back that went on the back of my standard Mamiya camera.
Okay. So just a different back for your camera. That's
instead
cool.
Instead of a film back. Right. And so I was one of the first people west of the Mississippi doing it.
Wow.
I actually demonstrated the camera when they introduced it at Fotokina in Germany in 1992.
And as you say, you can now print things that are huge, the size of a wall with printers now, which you wouldn't be able to do in a regular
Well, you could.
It was unless just, you had a really big tank.
It was a really big process to do that.
A whole bunch of minions, I think, pulling it around.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
I mean, even in the last 4 years, the software has really changed.
Yes.
The kind of basically artificially intelligence-assisted editing tools that you have are just phenomenal compared to even when I came here, you know, 7 years ago.
So. Right. I do want to ask you more, Carrie, about these photographs. So I'm looking at the two photographs I have here of your birds. One is called Nia Bay Doves, and the other one's called Trumpeters, which are swans. The Nia Bay Doves, they look sculptural. They look like they're three-dimensional in this photograph. They also look like they're tinted in some way, or is that just the light and the way you captured it?
It's the light and the way I captured it. So that picture was taken in Nia Bay, which is, you know, is a macaw territory. I was out there with my brother-in-law and his son, and we had been shooting all day. It's a wonderful place to see birds along the Wauch River and out to Hobuck Beach. Brian and I have actually been out there together. Mm-hmm. And it was one of those days that was just frustrating that you often have in photography, where it's just, you know, it was overcast, the birds weren't cooperating, they weren't posing right for me.
Uh-huh.
And,
those birds.
And I came back to this motel where we're staying. I can't remember the name of it, but it's run by this older couple. It's a phenomenal place. It should be a movie by you know, some documentary filmmaker of all the kind of quirky things they have. But one of the things, they're backed up against a wetland, and they have, I don't know, a dozen feeders. And they don't care whether the squirrels or the birds use them or anybody.
Oh, okay.
And I came back where we were staying to this place, and I was in the yard of the place. The light was fading. And I saw these doves at their Eurasian collared doves. I saw them at that feeder, and I thought, this is a picture. And I got down on the ground and started firing. You know, fired up the shutter speed so I'd be sure to get the motion. And just at that moment, the sun breaks out of the clouds.
Wow.
And puts that beautiful light on the bird. So, you know, that's what you look for, is just those, you know, if you do it enough and you're out there enough, that you'll find these precious moments where you can capture something
gorgeous.
Special.
And
I call that one Carrie's Michelangelo.
It's absolutely beautiful photograph. But Brian, I did want to ask you about the Welt Prismatic Exploration 1 and another photograph here. I'm just going to show them to you because they're like awash with color and texture. Is this, are you in focus? Are you out of focus? Are you narrowing it down to a certain part of a larger photograph, or is that the photograph?
You know, that part of it is the photograph. Mm-hmm. I make photographs. I know that a lot of people use the word take photographs. And I've been asked quite often, do you use Photoshop or filters or things of that nature? And I do. I use everything, every tool that I can use to create what I create.
Right, right.
And that's what these images are. They're creations that they've started as photographs that I've captured with a camera.
Right.
That's my paintbrush, so to speak. And then I go on from there.
Well, they're gorgeous, if you forgive me. They remind me of Gerhard Richter because of the way he uses squeegees to blur photorealistic paintings that he's done.
I've heard that before, Richter, and who were we talking about the other day?
Well, there's some of his photographs are like Rothko.
Right.
They're color fields.
Quite often people will see my work and they'll look at it and wonder if it's a watercolor or pastel. And when I hear that, I know that I've accomplished what I've wanted to accomplish. I've wanted to blur the line between what we commonly think of as a photograph and what we look at as art and paintings or other types of media. So
fantastic. Michael, I think we've given you the short shrift.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
Well, no, I think it's one thing I have to say in my role. It's important to be humble because it's the artists who are the stars.
Right.
But I do have a couple of comments if they just throw them out there, whether they land in the air or not. One is the commentary on the title of the show, Outside In, because I think it's important to know the connection between all three of the artists who have these very urgent ecological concerns and how our concerns about ecology are refracted through our culture. Mm-hmm. And that's a common thread for all of them.
Right.
And the other is about photography, because I think you pointed out something very interesting, that we have images are so fast and they're kind of free now. I mean, like you said, you had 20,000 of them on your phone. And so I think, I mean, my goal with the show, I think our goal collectively would be that people slow down a little bit and just really look at what's in front of them and take a moment to just contemplate, you know? And so just to the kind of urgency of the moment, because we've images are just flying around all the time, thousands of them on Instagram and wherever. Mm-hmm. And because we don't have that cost of them, we just have a film and emulsion and that sort of thing. So I think that would be one of my goals with this would be to have people kind of stop and pay attention.
You want them to take it in.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Yeah, exactly.
So, folks, slow down. Get down to the Jeanette Best Gallery. Starting on the 29th, it runs through August 27th. Brian Goodman, Carrie Tremaine, Michael Vince Snyder DeBose. Thank you for joining me today. Also in the show is Sarah Mull Jahani, and sculptures also by her late husband, Tom Jay. I've seen some pictures of those as well, and they're absolutely gorgeous. Thanks for being here on Attention, Please. I've been your host, Jim Burke. This is KPTZ in Port Townsend. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now get out there and see some art.